we're back.
Yes. For realsies this time. We took a little bit of a break. There were some mental breakdowns, but it's fine. And welcome back to History Time. Story time with a historical precedent. I'm Blake Anderson.
And I'm Catherine Escalante. I've never heard of a mental breakdown. What do you mean?
Oh, yeah. We don't know her.
I don't know
who
that is.
But yeah.
It wasn't me.
And because of said mental breakdowns, we decided we'd have like a cute, fun episode to distract us from the gloom and doom of the world.
Yes.
And when we say a cute, fun episode, Catherine and I mean we're going to talk about serial killers.
Yeah.
Like American... Oh, wait, not American necessarily. Mine are American. Or yours?
Yes, mine is American.
Okay, so accidentally American serial killers from history that you probably might not have heard of.
Or nothing if not nationalistic.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. I mean, no, Jack the Ripper was also in consideration, but we didn't want to be, like, that blatant and mainstream.
Yeah, we had to add a little bit of spice.
A little bit of spice. No, America is not spice. America is flour.
Yeah, you're right.
America is actually sugar, but that goes back to, like, controversy.
We're already 10 seconds in, we're already yelling about life.
So yeah,
what have you been up to? How's
your college? I am moving to the great city of Medford, Massachusetts.
Yes.
In 3 days now. So that's partially why we've been gone, is because I'm like getting ready to like move across the country during a pandemic. And Catherine here, tell us, tell the folks at home what you've been doing.
I've just been doing a lot recently.
She's been doing a lot.
My days have been filled with a lot of meetings, like, a lot of meetings, like, a stupid amount of meetings. And the problem is, on Zoom, you can't really process who you're talking to. So, for a second there, I was, like, talking to, our district representative, like, yeah, in the Senate. And I just, I challenged her on something, which, like, was kind of scary to me. I didn't process it till after the Zoom meeting. And then I was like, did I just do that? Yes, I did. Do I want to cry now? Very much so.
But isn't it funny how, like, someone... Wait, would you agree with her, like, politically?
Oh, yeah. I love her. We were just working on mission statements, and I'm like, I think we should change this. So it wasn't, like, a big deal.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Still, like... I kind of went against the grain, because everybody else was like, yeah, that's really good. I'm like, it is good.
But it can be better. Okay. And another thing, I'm going to brag for Catherine. Catherine is trying to, like, get out the youth vote for America this election.
Why did I say stop?
I don't know. But, this is, a friend brag. She's, like, kicking... You know what? I'm going to swear. She's kicking ass and taking names when it comes to, like, getting people registered to vote, making sure that they have the resources and everything needed to make this election has the best voter turnout possible.
Yeah.
Because when people complain about politics and their rationale behind it is like, I'm not gonna vote because my vote doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, you're not wrong. The Electoral College is a scam that like shouldn't exist in the first place. But like, it's not that your vote doesn't count. It's just that you feel it's your way of saying you have a voice. And the other thing too is so many ballot initiatives and just, like, things that are on there. Like, people just think that voting is just, like, you're voting for Joe Biden or you're voting for Donald Trump.
Right.
No, you're voting for, like, someone who's going to increase taxes for you in your own home state. Or
like,
a qualified attorney general versus whoever the hell we have now. Sorry, that's my rant. Go back to the 2018 election for attorney general in South Dakota and tell me I'm not upset.
Wow. Also, just a quick little thing. I believe recreational and medical marijuana are both on the ballot in South Dakota this year.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure CBD oil was a recent thing here in South Dakota. Hemp is still not a thing in South Dakota, which is very interesting because hemp doesn't even have THC in it. But can somebody tell Chrissy
they're smoking
that?
A lot of hemp.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure hemp is what's made like for sustainable clothing as well. So, you know, catch me, I don't know, snorting my t-shirt or something. Mm-hmm. Is that what they're afraid of? I don't know, to be honest. But, I don't know, for me, it's just, like, I hate when people are like, oh, I'm apolitical. I'm like, no.
I also hate the stance of, I hate everyone. Like, okay, your standard of, like, voting shouldn't be that you just hate everyone.
Right, like, voting is not, like, getting married.
No.
Okay, voting, it has a lasting effect.
It does have a lasting effect, but, like, at the same time, you know it ain't gonna be permanent. You know in 2, 4, 6 years, like... something is going to happen again.
Right. So, I think people just need to, you know, do the research.
Chill out. And then we're always like, it's the lesser of two evils. I'm like, bitch, you expecting them to be perfect?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm saying there are some things that are unforgivable, but at the same time, like, Teddy Roosevelt himself said, do what you can with what you have where you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think my biggest beef with this election right now, and this is with, like, the people on the left more so, is with, like, very leftist people. People that are, like, more left than, like, Bernie Sanders, I mean.
Yeah.
People that are, like, actively telling people on the left not to vote for Joe Biden because he's not progressive enough. I don't think those people understand, like, basic harm reduction. Like, if we don't have Joe Biden as president for the next 4 years, or even this goes for libertarians as well that are, like, voting for Joe Jorgensen, who's a libertarian candidate.
Oh, my God. Don't get me started. They don't
understand risk mitigation at all. Because, like, historically, what we see from the Trump administration is just, like, authoritarianism, mm-hmm. truly. Like, going past checks and balances, just not caring about the Constitution, but, like, quoting it.
Bro, and third-party candidate in the presidential election, look at 1912. America wouldn't even re-elect Teddy. They wouldn't even re-elect Teddy. Like, a third-party candidate for the the highest office in our land, like, it's just... Like, there's a credible argument to say that, like, that vote is subsequently somewhat wasted.
Yeah.
Like, you can do it because it's what you... Like, do it if it's what you believe in, but at the same time, like, think about the bigger picture, too.
Right. Like, I'm never gonna be like, oh, you're voting for Joe Jorgensen? Like, I don't like you, because I have huge respect for libertarians.
No, Joe Jorgensen's actually really qualified.
So, like, I'm not gonna be like, oh my god, I hate you for that. No, mm-hmm. I'm clearly not. I'm so happy you're voting. I'm so happy you're voting for someone that is, like, more competent than the person that we have in office right now. However, I wish you would understand that, like, that doesn't necessarily do anything for anyone, mm-hmm. other than, like, you sticking to your moral compass, but it still leaves a lot of the people that feel that are the most marginalized by both rhetoric and policy of this administration out in the shadows. So if you are a third party voter and you're just iffy, I would encourage you to just try a little bit more, actually do your research, reach out to me on social media. I can probably put together a nice little drive or folder or whatever, mm-hmm. on, like, reasons why you should vote for a certain candidate or why you shouldn't vote for a certain candidate. I mean, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do your thing.
So, yeah.
That was a nice little rant.
Sometimes we're, like, we need to, like, redo the intro, but, like, we're not redoing this one. No, I forbid it. This is fun. This is fine. Maybe if we've lost viewers, like, already by this point, I feel like we might have.
Oh, well,
you know what? It's our podcast.
You
know,
if we lost you from that, you weren't supposed to.
Not lost as in, like, confused or, like, you've zoned out. Like, lost you, like, we said something that upset you. I'm so sorry. Like, oh. I don't mean to be a Ben Shapiro. Everyone is welcome here. Like, if you disagree with me, I'll probably, like, genuinely play devil's advocate with you. Is it my turn for a quote or is it yours?
It is yours.
Okay. So while that happens, Catherine is going to tell us what's her favorite film based on a historical event.
Oh, like, give it a good thing. Oh, my goodness. You know how I love Alan Turing? He's, like, my favorite historical figure, mm-hmm. The Imitation Game. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding?
Mm-hmm.
Such a good movie. Favorite historical movie probably ever. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that was a really great segue.
We have one viewer from Russia. I just want to let you know.
I love that.
And one from Ecuador.
Hola. We're killing it. Okay, my quote today, speaking of, like, candidates and, like, electability and things like that, I'm going to talk about George S. McGovern, who in 1972 was the Democratic presidential candidate, and he's from South Dakota, now a very traditionally red state led by Kristi Noem, speaker at the RNC this week.
She was also a keynote speaker around 3 years ago, right next to unknown white supremacist.
Oh, that's a fun tidbit. Thank you, Catherine. Well, anyways, about George McGovern, there's one quote of his, even though he lost pretty bad, I also think it's funny, the only state he won is Massachusetts, so, like,
I mean,
good for him.
He got Massachusetts.
So, like, which is where I live starting Thursday. So it's a South Dakota thing, I guess. But he once said, "The highest patriotism is not a blind acceptance of official policy, but a love of one's country deep enough to call her to a higher standard."
Hey, That reminds me of my favorite phrase ever.
What?
Dissent is patriotic.
Amen.
I feel like, I have to talk about it.
So yeah, go George S. McGovern. So.
Yeah.
And honestly with that, we should probably say like what we're talking about today.
Well, we kind of mentioned it. We're doing serial killers.
Serial killers.
So I'm going to be talking about this man called H.H. Holmes. And my first, like, knowing of his story came from, like, this random book I read in, like, sixth grade. So now we're just going to develop that. You're going to get to hear about this horrible, horrible man.
Yeah. And I am going to be talking about a family of serial killers from the 1870s. It's pretty heavy stuff, not gonna lie. It gets gruesome, it gets bad. But it's like, I don't know where I'm going with that. Actually, it's just bad. But for people who are weird like us and find like true crime fascinating because like psychology and things, it should be a good episode.
Yeah, I think we'll put in a cute little disclaimer right now saying none of this is for glorification purposes. We'll both say these people are horrible and, you know.
The other thing is that, like, mine fits in with, like, the time period. So I like to talk about, like, the history of the time and, like, how that fits into it.
Some historical context for you.
Get some context going. So, yeah, with that, grab your snacks. Catherine, do you have anything to add?
Get out there and vote, my dudes.
Gather and vote. Okay. that's very good. Grab your snacks, relax, and enjoy this episode of His Story Time. And welcome back. Okay, guys. So today I'm going to be talking about a group of people known as the Bloody Benders.
That's a name.
It's a name. And this one, it just became relevant again in 2020. But I'll get into that in a second. So in early February of 2020, there was this 162-acre plot of Kansas land that went up for sale. And it's kind of famous, but not for good reason.
Hmm.
It's known as the Historic Bender Farm. It's listed as simply Tract 2 in a bundle of 15 properties that were up for auction on February 11th, 2020. The company that was doing the auction describes the land as some mature trees and a beautiful view overlooking the Drum Creek and the farmland bottoms below. So, the land for sale had actually been previously owned, like, up until, again, this auction. The property's current owners that had it before the auction purchased the land in either the 1950s or 60s, although that's not confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And they bought the land after, people knew what happened there and kind of visited and stuff. But they bought the land after the hype kind of died down and people stop going to their house and stuff. So, again, this auction manager person clarifies, saying it is strictly cropland, and that this same spokesperson says they suspect that the property will continue to be useful as farmland by its new owner, but notes that the upcoming sale of property could provide a neat opportunity for somebody who's interested in that type of history.
Hmm.
So now let's get into like what he means by that type of history.
Oh,
so,
please.
So, in 1870, this is at the height of like westward expansion too. There's some vacant Kansas land. Okay. And there's a German family that had immigrated. So they were part of, these five families of spiritualists that settled in western Labette County, which is about 7 miles northeast of where Cherryvale would have been platted a year later. And one of the five families are the Benders. So this is the family dynamic. We have the father, John Bender Sr., his wife, Almira, their son, Johnny Jr., and their daughter, Kate. We're going to talk about Kate. You're going to like Kate. Kate is kind of... they're sure described, she's, no, no.
Oh, okay. No. I'm interested.
So they're described as being straight up coke. This is like description, cult-like.
Okay. That's a great description.
Mm-hmm. So the family, they chose several claims to begin to make their homes. John Bender Sr., chooses the 160-acre section on the western slopes of the mounds that would later be called the Bender Mounds. And they're still called the Bender Mounds today.
Jeez. What a legacy.
I know. And this is important. The location of this Bender Farm is directly on the Osage Mission Independence Trail. So you start in Independence, like so many Western travelers would. Mm-hmm. But it would take you to Fort Scott. That's kind of a difference. Okay. So yeah. Johnny Jr. chooses a narrow piece of land just north of his father, and he never lives on his claim or like makes any improvements. So he like has the land. The land is his. Yeah. But he does nothing with it.
Gotcha.
So they keep to themselves, and like everyone else at the time, they're struggling homesteaders. The Donner Party, that's like this type of era. People like Oregon Trail, Mormon Trail, that's like,
oh yeah,
this type of living. It's like Manifest Destiny that kind of got interrupted by the Civil War.
I see. That's some nice historical context for you.
Yeah. The Bloody Benders changed the meaning of Bleeding Kansas, though.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, that was a good one. I hope you appreciate that. So, like, again, they're struggling on the farmland and stuff. They're just trying to make their living, make their way in America. Again, they're immigrants. So this is, like, a real immigrant success story, but not the kind that we'd want, like,
people to capitalize.
Not to aspire to be or, like, capitalize upon. Yeah,
this
we're
not
gonna...
the American dream.
Nope, not the American dream. So, and is this also worth noting? John Bender Sr. is 60 years old when he gets to this land, and his wife Almira is 55. So John is a giant. He's over 6 feet tall, and he's described as having piercing black eyes set deeply under huge bushy eyebrows. People called him, this is a quote, old beetle-browed John. His face is ruddy, he's got a beard, and he has this sullen expression, and long hair, and this is another quote, described as a wild and woolly-looking man.
Goodness.
So
you make him sound like Sasquatch, yeah. For goodness sake.
Now we're going to talk about Almira. Almira is described as raw, like, raw-boned, thin, her cheeks, like, cut in. They have very, very thick German accents, and few people can understand them.
Okay.
Mrs. Bender is described as also being a heavy-set woman with defined features, who was so unfriendly, again, sinister eyes, and the neighbors, so, like, the same five families start calling her the She-Devil.
That's not very nice.
Ma Bender, also, so Almira, is a self-proclaimed medium, enjoys speaking to the dead, and would, like, make potions with herbs and roots and cast charms or wicked spells. Her husband and son apparently were afraid of her and would and she ran the household with an iron hand. This is tea I got from legendsofamerica.com. My other sources were CNN and the Smithsonian and history.com. So like, if there's anything spicy I'm saying, other than, like, this entire story, which is kind of crazy, but, like, it's probably from this Legends of America, so we have to take that with a grain of salt, but my other sources are definitely credible. So, again, Almira runs the household with an iron hand. So, again, we have this family dynamic. John Bender, Sr., father. There's also... Okay, wait, no, this is important to note. Some people say the wife's name is Almira. Some people say that the wife's name is Kate.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, how do you get
there was one sort, because the daughter's name is Kate, too.
Oh, okay.
Because then it's John and Kate and Kate. And I'm like, okay, that's way too much.
Interesting.
So.
That'd be confusing.
It is confusing. So I'm like, I'm going to command F one of my sources really quick. Yeah. Okay, never mind. Two of my sources confirm. The Smithsonian says it's Kate. I think Legends of America says her name is Almira.
So, anytime he said Almira.
So, anytime I said Almira, just, like, kind of disregard.
It's actually Kate.
Yeah, legendsofamerica.com says Almira. So, it's either Almira... What's, like, a cute name we combine Almira and Kate with?
I don't I don't think there's a cute way.
There's nothing we can do with that. Okay, I kind of want to call her Almira, though, because if we have two Kates, that's confusing. Okay, her name is probably Kate, but I'm going to call her Almira.
Yes, we love historical accuracy.
Historical accuracy.
It's okay. I don't think we'll ever beat the time I forgot what the 12th Amendment was.
Oh, and we need to clarify.
Well. Or when I consistently mix up the Mexican-American War and the Spanish-American War.
Yeah. Well, I've done a few things like that.
Yeah.
Remember when I forgot Ptolemy in that episode about...
And we had to refilm
We had to refilm the entire episode because I forgot about the little brother who, like... His entire, like, character arc and plotline was that he's forgotten about. Yeah, I do too. Anyways, speaking of little kids who are forgotten about, let's talk about Kate.
What a segue.
Let's talk about Kate. yes. Okay, Kate. So, little is known about the Benders. They keep to themselves. However, people notice that there are certain strange things going on with the younger Kate. So, there's a historical marker that's next to the farm. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. It describes Kate, and this is a quote, soon gained notoriety as a self-proclaimed healer and spiritualist.
Hmm.
She has auburn hair. She's described as being petite and had a desire for notoriety and advocated for free love and justification for murder.
Wowza.
Yeah. Along with her desire for fame, she also craved wealth and possession, beauty, social skills, popular. She begins to, like, make herself a certain figure in the public's eyes, but they don't like it. They call her satanic, which, oh, I mean, God. If you're, like, justifying murder, maybe, like, yeah, maybe that's like, a little taboo or something. So, She takes the most blame in history for what happens. Now, let's talk about what the Bloody Benders actually did. They had this little shack, a little hut that was also, like, doubled as an inn. And it's a little scary. This is where it gets gruesome, so hang on. They had this hut, right?
Okay.
The front of the hut was kind of like a... Just, like, a post. People could get some groceries or, like, necessities for traveling. Because remember, they're on that trail. The Osage Trail. They would have visitors coming through heading west to California. Because that's also big at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Just people, like, spreading west. Because Americans have always wanted to do that for some reason. We were always, like, really hungry to go west.
Manifest destiny.
Or, like, the Proclamation Line of 1763. Just, like... We always want to go west for some reason.
Throwback,
yeah. We always want to go west for some reason, and I mean, like, I get reasons, but, like, we're not gonna get into them. Anyways, this family begins promising people, like travelers, a hot meal and a chance to rest.
Wow.
So they have this one room hut that they would say would become two rooms, when a canvas curtain would, like, partition, like, the front where, like, the store was to, like, a back room. There was, like, a bed and, like, a table, a chair, things where they'd, like, have dinner. They sold goods like crackers, sardines, candies, and the sleeping quarters were, again, in the back. So, there's a photo that you can find of this, too.
Okay.
It's creepy as heck. So, they would seat whoever the guest was, with their back to the canvas cloth that partitioned the two separate rooms. So when the person was sitting in the chair, the room was so small that, like, their head was outlined in the cloth.
Mm-hmm.
They would have one family member stand on the other side of the canvas partition with a hammer.
No.
And when they could make out the outline of the victim, they would throw the hammer, knock them unconscious, and then from where the victim was sitting, they would fall through the floor into, like this, like a trap door into this tiny, like, I don't know, like, hole where another family member would be, and they would slit their throat to make sure that they were dead and take them, and take all their possessions.
That's such a weird...
Yes.
Like, I mean...
Mm-hmm. Isn't that messed up? So,
like, there's just a lot to it.
Mm-hmm. So, now we're gonna get into it. So, they do this for a while. They become genuine serial killers, and they have an operation... get into, like, what they... like.
Where did they put the bodies?
We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Because, like, that was part of the reason they didn't get caught. So, people were able to later figure out, like, what the heck was going on. They would take, but here's the other thing, too. It wasn't uncommon for, like, travelers to, like, go missing on their, like, foot journey to the west.
Right.
You got eaten by a mountain lion, or you had, like, you got sick, or you died of dysentery.
Right, there was ways.
Or you died of dysentery, yeah.
People don't immediately jump to a hammer murdering family with trapdoor yeah. and a fake hostel. That's not...
The odds of that happening are just, like, slim. So, again, people just, like, didn't think about it. And the other thing, too, this is just a fun little historical fact. On the Lewis and Clark journey, only one person died, and it was because of appendicitis. Acute appendicitis. Wow. It was Sergeant Charles Floyd. And when his appendix ruptured, he quickly died of peritonitis.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said that right. So, yeah. However, so the benders keep doing this, and someone gets tipped off when this person named George Lochner and his daughter, traveling from Kansas to visit family in Iowa, they disappear without a trace, okay? Okay. That was the first time where, like, they'd killed someone, and people were like, huh, whatever people happened like, to them? Like, George is a well-respected guy, and his, like, he wouldn't let anything happen to his daughter. They both disappeared at the same time. That is odd.
Who knew?
Yeah. Then, there's this well-known doctor, William York, and he disappears, okay?
Oh, no.
However, William York, told people about, like, where he was going, and there were, his brothers, actually, were able to piece together that William York's last known place was at the Bender farm.
Wow.
So they confront the Bender family, this crusade, mm-hmm. and the family admits that he'd been there, but, like, they're like, oh, he didn't stay long. So, like, that's what they tell them. And then in spring of 1873, so this is 3 years after they, began their journey, of murdering people.
Darn. I hate how that was a journey.
And the Bender farm is abandoned.
Just out of the blue?
Out of the blue.
They said bye?
Yeah. They find the family's livestock either dead or starving, so they'd been gone for a while.
Huh.
So, yes.
I mean, I didn't expect them to, like, tell anyone they were leaving, but mm-hmm. to leave their livestock starving, that's
mm-hmm.
a little odd.
Yes. So, let's talk about one thing, too. They search the property. They find the cellar. That's the word I was looking for. The trap door into the cellar.
Okay.
And Billy Toll was the person who'd, like, noticed that the farm was empty. And he's a neighbor of the Benders. And the township trustee... is informed, and there's a search party, and Dr. York's brother, Colonel A.M. York of Fort Scott, is involved in the search party. Because he's like, frick you guys, I'm gonna go find my brother. When the search party arrives, they, again, find no food, clothing, personal possessions, but they have this terrible smell.
Oh, no.
They find the trap door nailed shut and discovered... in the floor of a cabin, the 6-foot cellar that was filled with clotted blood and caused a terrible odor. However, there are no bodies in the cellar.
So it's just blood. And yeah. A really bad smell.
But they're like, okay, well, something died here. Yeah. Like,
something
genuinely.
Happened.
So they pick up the entire cabin and move it to see if they can find anything under the cabin, and they find nothing.
Huh.
So they, like, just are like, okay, well, like, something died here.
The walls.
They're gonna, like, keep looking. Okay, that's your guess in the walls. Everyone listening, like, just take a wild guess about where the bodies might be.
Are they in the walls?
Yeah. No.
Oh.
They're not in the walls. But, begin to, like, search around the cabin. And, they find this area that's a vegetable garden and an orchard. They find this freshly stirred depression in the earth. And they find the first body. The body is buried with body's buried, like, feet sticking closest to the ground. Ugh. And the head is the farthest down.
Damn, that's a weird way.
Yeah, that's a weird way to bury a body. So imagine, like,
I mean, there's no not weird way.
Like a kind of skinny but deep hole. They threw someone in the hole and then dug it up. Ugh. And the person they find in the hole is Dr. William York.
Oh, no.
His skull was bludgeoned, which is how they, I think that's how they figure out that, like, they hit him with a hammer and his throat was cut.
Right.
From ear to ear, it says.
Oh.
I know. So, there's also a story, too. So, they say that, like, they suspect up to 21 people could have been murdered, but they didn't, to this day, they haven't checked, like, the entire property.
Why?
Because, like, also, it's been, like, 150 years.
Okay. That would make sense.
And I don't think they wanted to. It's a very Kansas thing. It's unsettling. They think there could be more, and they honestly just wouldn't know. But they did find like multiple bodies, like enough to achieve serial killer status.
Did the family just like?
We'll talk about it. There's conspiracy. So the saddest part.
Good.
You're fine. Okay. For the viewers at home, if you just heard a bump.
Technical difficulties. Not Catherine's fault.
Catherine's foot kicking the microphone.
No, not that.
What a weird assumption. This is sad. I don't know if I want to say it. Should I say it?
I'm going to say it.
Okay. They also killed a girl, like a child. So they had, and I don't know if it's the same girl from earlier, like the father and son. I would assume so.
Right.
But that's also, again, from legendsofamerica.com/KS-benders. So take it with a grain of salt. But, they did, like, confirm to find a young girl's body. And this is really sad. The evidence suggests that she actually didn't die from her wounds.
Ugh.
She died from being buried alive.
No.
I know. Which is awful. So, yeah. So they dig up all these bodies. Authorities issue a $2,000 reward, which is worth more than $50,000 today for the family's capture. However, the fate of the family remains unclear. Some people say that the Benders are killed by vigilantes. Others believe, like, they successfully escaped and just, like, never were found.
But I wonder if they could stop killing. Like, mm-hmm. I know their killing wasn't necessarily, like, purely psychological. Like, I wonder.
But that's the thing.
But I feel like, I don't know.
But here's the thing. So, like, you know, they would kill the person and see if they had valuables on them?
Right.
For all of the deaths, like, up to 21 people, and a person is there's this one source who's pretty confident that they're the property's never been scanned for missing bodies. It was Wellings. Wellings is the person who's also the the person selling the land today.
Oh, okay.
So he straight up just told this newspaper in February of 2020 he's pretty confident that the property's never been scanned for missing bodies. So we know that they killed at least 21 people, but for the 21 people that it could have been, they'd only gained about $4,600.
Ew.
Which, like, if you think about, like, killing people, you'd think it would, like, be more than that. And I don't know if that's $4,600, like, then, or $4,600 today. I feel like if it were $4,600 then, that's actually a lot of money, but, like...
But still, it's not...
Yeah.
Sizable enough to be, like, I'm going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
Nothing in my mind.
And then it goes on to say from the same source, but and that's also, again, you guess from what source? Legendsofamerica.com. So, it's so...
Sponsored.
Yeah, sponsor us, please. Because like, many travelers were carrying nothing of value, it's speculated the Benders killed simply for the bloody thrill of it.
Ew.
So, yeah. There is a sign on the Bender property that I mentioned earlier, the Kansas Historical Marker. And it ends like this. As more and more travelers disappeared, suspicion began to center on the Benders. They disappeared in the spring of 1873, shortly before inquisitive neighbors discovered the victims' bodies. The Benders are believed to have killed about a dozen people, including one child, although it could be more. Although stories abound, the ultimate fate of the murderous Bender family is uncertain. Some say they escaped. Others that they were executed by a vengeful posse. Their story is unresolved and remains one of the greatest unsolved mysteries of the Old West.
Wow.
So that is a story of the Bloody Benders. People who just made a killing.
Wow.
So, yeah. Now, that was depressing.
That was quite depressing. I mean, there's not much to expect with stories about serial killers. Mm-hmm. I think what's very interesting, and this could be a cute little tie-in that we do to, like, modern issues.
I was just thinking of a cute tie-in for modern issues.
Okay, maybe we should let go of the word cute. Interesting tie-in. Yeah.
No, mine's cute. Mine's cute. Yours can be interesting. Oh, okay. Yours can interesting be interesting. Tie-in.
I don't know what law enforcement was like at this time, but mm-hmm. I wonder, like, how we got from, like, decentralized law enforcement to, like, the little bit, like, more bureaucratical system that we have today. That's just a question.
Well, the other thing, too, is, like, they made it sound like the people who, like, went on the Inquisition were, like, a militia, more so.
Right.
Which America had today has over 200 active militias.
Wowza.
That are just, like, chilling, waiting for things to happen. But, like...
I didn't even know we had, like, that many active militia at all. Wow.
That could just, like, come up at any moment. My cute little tie-in is that, like, sometimes in America you have a murderous family who does some damage. And people say that they're going to, like, become this dynasty and, like, going to be known for so much. Even if they have, like, 170,000 deaths on their hands because of a global pandemic. Catherine just hit me.
That was blasphemy. I swatted.
She...
There is a fly.
Oh, okay. She didn't want me to go there. I'm saying sometimes family...
That was a tie-in.
Family can be deadly, especially if it's one family who can be powerful. And stand behind a curtain promising you a hot meal and dinner, and then in reality murder you for their own benefit.
Like, I love your tie-ins.
Because there's someone behind the curtain that you don't see, who, like, could murder you because it's their own benefit and their own prerogative. And the other thing, too, is I'm going to make that claim separate from, like, the fact that there's, like, a family. I'm just saying you got to be careful. Like, the way they killed is, like, so metaphoric of, like, just things in life. So people can promise you, like, things you need to live. They can promise you food and shelter and a place to, like, sleep. But they can also be your downfall.
So, basically, you have someone behind your curtain pulling the strings and throwing a hammer at your head.
Correct. Be careful. And on that note, we're going to take a little break. This is an episode you might actually need to take a break because Catherine's about to tell us about another, killer. Oh, okay. So, take a break, grab some snacks, and join us back here for another segment of His Story Time.
So, today, I'm going to be telling the story of H.H. Holmes. So, his story starts in 1861, when H.H. Holmes, or Herman Webster Mudgett, was born. Mudgett.
I love that.
I know. What a name. Was born in New Hampshire, of all places. It is said that from a very early age, he was, like, fascinated with skeletons and soon became obsessed with death.
Spooky. You know, like the spooky skeleton song.
No.
Spooky, scary skeletons.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'll stop talking.
Oh, I just had a flashback to a like great middle school. Halloween yeah. parties. Oh, wow.
Okay, that actually is H.H. Holmes, but okay.
Right. Okay, so this fascination with death and skeletons might have been the thing that really pushed him into pursuing a career in medicine. So after graduating high school at the age of 16, Mudgett changed his name to Henry Howard Holmes. And then eventually he would go by the moniker H.H. Holmes. Now, Holmes studied medicine at a small school in Vermont before being accepted into University of Michigan Medical School. While enrolled in medical school, Holmes stole cadavers from the laboratory, burned or disfigured them, and then planted the bodies, making it look as if they had been killed in an incident. The scandal behind this all would basically mean that Holmes would take out his insurance. Oh, wait, hold on. Whoa.
Catherine just learned something.
I read that so wrong the first time, and then I just kind of wrote it. Guys, this is even worse. The scandal behind it all was that Holmes would literally take out insurance policies on these people before, like, planting their bodies and would collect money once the bodies were discovered. This man is sociopathic. So on that note, it gets worse. Straight out of medical school, Holmes spent his summer as an insurance scammer, as we have been knowing now, before moving to Illinois in advance of the 1893 Chicago World Fair to work as basically a pharmacist at a drugstore.
Oh.
Now, when the owner of this drugstore passed away, it doesn't say the circumstances in which he passed away, but I'm just going to go ahead and
say he killed him.
Sus.
Literally, let's just be like, he killed him. Add him to the list.
Maybe. But just wait. He left his wife, the owner of the drugstore, left his wife to take over the responsibilities of the store. However, Holmes convinced the widow to let him buy the store. The widow soon went missing and was never seen again.
Oh.
Holmes claimed that she moved to California, but, you know, I don't think his ethos is very strong right now. So, and again, the website specifically says as well that this could never be verified. So, yeah. After Holmes had become owner of the drugstore, he purchased an empty lot across the street. He designed and built a 3-story hotel, which his neighbors now call the castle.
Oh, God.
Quote, unquote. And the castle was, again, a 3-story inn he secretly turned into a torture
Why
chamber.
Did both of us... We did not coordinate this, guys.
No.
We did not coordinate these... Are both of our people, like, running... I mean, my people kind of had, like, a bread and breakfast.
Mine was, like, a whole, like, torture inn with 3 stories and
I just
secret
said,
passages.
No one make fun of me on Twitter for saying bread and breakfast. I meant bed and breakfast.
It's okay. It happens sometimes.
Okay, well, tell us about this evil bread and... I did it again. Bed and breakfast of death.
Okay, so some rooms were literally equipped with hidden peepholes.
Oh.
Which, not good. Gas lines. Trap doors. And soundproof padding. Other accommodations that you could find, or I'll say amenities for goodness sakes, that were featured in this hotel were secret passages, ladders, and hallways with dead ends. There was also a greased chute that would lead to the basement. This is where our man, Holmes, installed a surgical table, a furnace, and even a medieval rack.
What's a medieval rack?
I literally do not know, but I think it's like...
I'm gonna look it up and then probably scream.
I'm kinda scared.
Scream slash cry.
You know how, like, we were supposed to do pictures of something that related to the episode?
Let's
and
not
post it on
do
Twitter?
That.
Let's see what a medieval rack is. Anyone know? Is anybody screaming at us from their couch or whatever? Oh, got it. It's a torture device consisting of a rectangular, usually wooden frame, slightly raised from the ground, with a roller at one or both ends. The victim's ankles are fastened to one roller and the wrists are chained to another. Whoa.
Remind me never to live in the medieval times.
Yeah, I remember talking about this in World. Yeah.
Oh.
Dang. Okay. That's really not good.
Wow.
So, during the 1889 construction, I don't mean to be... Okay, this is a quick thing. I don't mean to be so, like, buoyant about it all. This is just how I cope. So...
We all cope different ways, especially with things that are absolutely awful, like what we're talking about today.
Yeah, so during its 1889 construction, Holmes hired and fired several construction crews so that no one would have a clear idea of what he was doing. But essentially, he was designing a murder castle. Now, I think we just need to take a moment to observe this man's, like, horrible, sadistic genius. Because he literally made it so nobody knew what was happening. Except him. Like, the people that built this thing didn't even know. Like, that's kind of insane. So, after construction was complete in 1891, Holmes placed ads in newspapers offering jobs for young women and advertised the castle as a place of lodging.
Ew.
He also placed ads presenting himself as a wealthy man looking for a wife, which I literally said, ew, high key, in my notes. I said, ew, high key, and I stand by that. So let's talk about how he kind of did everything, I guess. So in 1893, Chicago was given the honor of hosting the World's Fair, right? This was a huge cultural and social event of the time to celebrate the 400th anniversary of, quote, Columbus discovery of America.
Unquote. Okay, I hate that too.
So we're already not off to a great start here. The event was scheduled from May to October, which attracted millions of people from all over the world, apparently. So when Holmes heard about the World Fair coming to Chicago, he looked at it as this, like, opportunity, apparently. He knew many visitors would be searching for lodging near the fair, and he believed that many of them would be women who he could easily seduce into staying into his hotel. So after being lured into the hotel, many of these out-of-town visitors would never be seen again, surprisingly, I know. Holmes led many of his victims, mostly young women, to his lair, only to asphyxiate them with poison gas take them to his basement for horrific experiments. He then either disposed of the bodies in his furnace. Oh my god, this is bad. Disclaimer, bad.
Disclaimer, bad. Okay.
Or skinned them and stole their skeletons to medical schools.
Okay, and no one thought that was weird. No one was like, hey, bro, where are you getting all these skeletons?
Yeah.
Oh, there's...
This is not making it good. So, specifically, he also had all the Holmes employees of the hotel, guests, and fiancés and wives and stuff were required to have a life insurance policy.
No.
He's very into, like, insurance policies, apparently. Holmes paid the premiums as long as they listed him as the beneficiary. Which, like, dude, if my employer was like, I'm paying for your insurance premium, you just have to make me, like, the sole benefactor of your death. I would be like, sure, and then leave and call the police, you know?
That's, yeah, makes sense.
That's just not, wow. But, you know, historical context, I guess. So, yeah, most of his fiancés and wives would suddenly just, like, disappear, as did many of his employees and guests. People in the neighborhood eventually reported that they saw many women enter the castle, but would never see them exit. Which, gruesome. Holmes was finally caught when one of his co-conspirators tipped off the police after Holmes failed to deliver him a payout. Holmes was eventually convicted of murders of 4 people, but he confessed to at least 27 more killings before being hanged in 1896.
Wait, what happened to the castle?
Like, okay, one sec. I don't think this says what happened.
I looked up on Wikipedia. Hold up.
Okay, the castle was remodeled as an attraction and named the Holmes Horror Castle. However, it burned to the ground shortly before its opening. Good.
What?
Good.
Okay, that's not a coincidence. That's not a coincidence. We know our boy H.H. Holmes loved his fire. I'm thinking he...
But he was in jail. Or no, he was hanged before this.
I'm thinking his ghost.
Okay. Or the ghost of his victim. Are you kidding me?
Literally, well, he was a little fire boy. Well, he was a little... Can we call this episode something bender? Like, firebender? Or something?
Bro.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, that's H.H. Holmes. Dude, I remember doing the research. Uh-huh. And reading all these things and typing them out all in this doc and being like, yeah.
Word. Makes sense.
And just reading them out loud is a completely different experience because you just like visualize it and you're like, I don't like it.
Yeah. Oh, wow. The recitation is just a lot. Okay. Can we talk about like...
Do you think things like this could like happen with like social media today? Like Yelp reviews and stuff? I mean, not that I think... that Yelp reviews necessarily prevent murders, but like just like imagine someone trying to build something similar.
A murder hotel.
Yeah, a murder hotel now. Like what would that
I think this is literally a season of American Horror Story. Like wow. Hotel.
Yeah.
So
horrible, truly.
Yeah.
So, our goal with this episode was, quote, be more lighthearted, unquote. I think we failed at that
quite miserably. We did.
However, I think we also gave you a little bit of insight into what a pre... I don't know where I'm going with that.
This is going to be, like, one of a lot of our, like, I think October episodes might be, like, spooky. Yeah.
As soon as the leaves start to turn colors for me, that's when I started getting in Halloween mode. It just so happens that it's August 23rd and leaves are falling out of the trees.
Yeah. Other thing, too, Catherine and I, like, live for this stuff. And not that we live for this stuff. We're just saying it's to die for. But, I shouldn't have done that. I feel wrong. But, we talk about this stuff too. There's a really great podcast called My Favorite Murder. I've plugged it before, but they'll talk about stuff like this too. And it's not in a way that's like romanticizing what happened. Like, that's not what it's like here to do. It's here to just like cope with like things that are awful. Like, it just makes me feel like it's not reassuring to know that it happened, but it's reassuring to know that like justice was either brought. In the case of Catherine's, justice was brought. In the case of mine, I'm sorry. If there's a German family who's offering you a bed and breakfast, like, be wary. But,
you know, I think it's kind of interesting. This could be a little bit of a tie-in as well. Like, Holmes was hanged.
Yeah.
Death penalty, anyone?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, is the state ever entitled to hang someone and death penalty them?
I feel like every serial killer who's been murdered by like the death penalty, like, there's just a creepy story. There's such a creepy story with it.
You have to do something to warrant it, you know, or to justify it in a legal sense. To me, even, like, at least, there is no moral justification for any type of murder. That's just me. Like, I don't think the state should have that power. That might be a little libertarian in me. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's end on, like, a positive note. Like, let's end on, like, a recommendation corner or something. Like, what are some shows we could, like, recommend or something?
I'm watching Gilmore Girls for the 9th time.
She's watching Gilmore Girls. See, we're trying to be happy now and positive and hopefully, like, the co-hosts that you've come to know and love. hopefully, you know, come to know and love us. I almost said that backwards. But we also, I just finished Tuesdays with Maury. Cried like a little girl.
Avatar, watch
like
Avatar.
A baby girl. Yeah, this episode will be named Something Bender. So look at what this episode's called right now and just think like, wow, Blake and Catherine really came up with that after Blake said this, or like, wow, that's what they came up with. Yeah, it's gonna be crazy. Other than that, I don't think we have anything else to add. I just hope it's not depressing as heck, this episode at least, and it's like things that are like interesting to just think about that they've happened in this world, because the world can be like a terrible place, but like,
indeed,
but we have each other, especially with everything going on right now. Like, and I think it's so funny that that's just like a part of everything we have to say now. We have to say with everything going on right now, and you have to like specify which everything you're talking about.
Like, what is it?
What is
pandemic, the civil rights movement,
the election?
So much. Was Brexit this year? That's a question.
2020 has felt like 7 years.
It literally has. Was it this year? It literally was this year. Are you kidding me? I remember being in the blockhouse when this happened.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe Brexit's a thing. But with that, just know that we all have each other. Call your mother. Your mother misses you. Call your grandparents, yeah, cousins, aunts, dogs, former neighbors, significant others, friends, and check tell them you love them.
Because make sure they're not staying at any hotels.
No hotels. Hotels are bad. That's what we're taking away from this episode. Hotels equal bad. So you guys just hang in there. Be awesome. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of His Story Time. Stay safe. Stay welcome. Stay warm, even though it's really hot out, most likely. So, yeah. With that, thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of History Time.